halfway done, halfway to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, probably by around sort of later Monday night. Remus is away for the weekend. We gave him the weekend off, so you know the show will be ready about Monday night or so, available for download on iTunes. You can search for it, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked. Say it with me, guys.
Well done.
Is it?
Well done.
Pizza baked.
No, I'm saying well done, Drew.
Yeah. Well done. There were some other trades besides the Jordan Staal deal that we spoke about earlier. The first one sort of happened just as the draft was getting started. The New York Islanders sent a draft pick to the Anaheim Ducks,
second round
2013 draft pick,
yep,
in exchange for Lubomir Vyshnovsky. Now, the Islanders need help on the back end, so you can justify it in that sense. And there's also an appeal to them in that Vyshnovsky's actual salary is about $3 million, but his cap hit for next season is, I think, about $5.1 million. So they can...
I thought it was higher than that.
Well, let me double check. I know it's in the $5 million range, if I'm not mistaken. But let's talk... Does Vyshnovsky still have enough to help an NHL team?
Oh, yeah. Great skater, smooth skater, really good passer, good puck handler, can has a good one-timer, can shoot the puck. Not good defensively, smaller guy, getting a little bit older. Probably not as fast as he once was, but not slow by any means. Still a good skater.
$5.6 million is his cap hit.
And he can play on the power play there with Mark Streit. That's a really good power play duo there. I like the way that depends on how they're going to format it, but in any event, they have two really good puck moving defensemen. His cap hit's better for so they can get up to the bottom of the floor if there is a floor next year. I like the move for the Islanders. I think Anaheim's signaling a little bit of a rebuild here.
Yep.
And their back end, they want to have guys like Spezza and guys like that take on more of a role. And Vyshnovsky's getting up there in age. Gives them a little bit more flexibility in terms of money. It probably saves them some money, frankly. Gives them a little more in the system with the second-round pick. And Vyshnovsky, the Islanders can't keep drafting. They have to get some active bodies on the roster. So I thought it was a fine deal for both sides. Actually, a little bit surprised they'd maybe get a little bit more of a mid-level prospect tossed in with the second rounder. But I guess with the expiring contract and his age, that's what the market was gonna give him.
And Richie, you look at, just quickly here, you look at who the Islanders have now, and Mark Streit obviously is making some money, and he's a good defenseman, and you look at some of the other guys. They
like
have
Hamannik.
Travis Hamannik and Calvin DeHaan. They've got some good young defensemen there. And, as Drew mentioned, right at the top of the hour with the New York Islanders, They got to do something here. They haven't won a playoff round in, I think, 50 years. So they need to get going here. And, I mean, you've got Tavares and Molson and, the Okposo. And you're going to have to start making the playoffs eventually. You can't just miss the playoffs every year after year.
A couple of things there, Izzy. I mean, I thought they played hard for Capuano last year. Not a lot of talent, but I thought they played hard. And you mentioned their defenseman. Travis Hamonic's a really nice player. Matto, a really good player, underrated. And you add Vyshnovsky and you have Streit. So you have puck movers, you have Hamonic playing all roles. Calvin DeHaan, you mentioned, I had a chance to see him last year in the AHL. So really, I think he's a Manitoba boy as well. Not the biggest guy. Not going to smack anybody around, but he's a smart player. He's pretty positionally sound, and he moves the puck. So they really have guys who can move the puck out of their own zone. They can get some good goaltending, and they have some young players at forward. They seem to be slowly moving in the right direction, and I have no issues with the move they had. They drafted Griffin Reinhardt. Some people don't see the upside there as maybe some of the other defensemen in the draft, but I don't think they see a ton of downside either, so it's not a huge risk for a team that seems to sometimes not know what the heck they're doing. But I like the move there in terms back to the trade. I thought the Vyshnovsky trade was a good move for them. You need to have some moving assets here.
Griffin Reinhardt and Henrik Samuelsson both played for the Edmonton Oil Kings, and they were two guys that in the Memorial Cup really shot up. And Griffin Reinhardt, even though his offensive upside isn't huge, he's going to be a solid defenseman. And so in that sense, it's a smart pick. And I think, Richie, you tweeted this yesterday. The Islanders were considering moving that fourth overall pick.
They were.
And I guess teams weren't as high on some of those other guys that, maybe would have piqued their interest, like guys like Teravainen and Forsberg. Because aside from those guys, it was really all defensemen with Trouba and Dumba. I think the Wild got a really good player in Dumba there at number seven. But, yeah, you're right. And the Islanders still need more scoring. And goaltending is always going to be an issue with DiPietro's injury issues and Nabokov's age and all that. But they're moving in the right direction. That's that's the type of move that, like you said, the Islanders are going to continue to have to make. And, you know, Vishnovsky and Strait, two guys that, you know, they're not the youngest guys, but they'll be solid guys that they'll have for the next few years.
And they both have their defensive deficiencies.
Offensive defense
point that out. But offensive defensemen, right. Exactly. And puck-moving defensemen. And guys who can not only move the puck out of their own zone, but can play the power play. And that's important.
And then Hamonic and DeHaan will match up with those guys.
And you get DeHaan out there next year consistently. Yep. Hamonic's proven himself to be a very capable defender. So there is a nice base there.
Going to be another change with the Anaheim Ducks. It sounds like Bobby Ryan is completely fed up with the organization.
He's not happy there, Drew. I mean, he shouldn't be.
I obviously, there's a prima donna element to a guy making that much money and complaining about it. But at the same time, they have looked to deal him. It's clearly no secret. And,
right. And based on his comments yesterday, which I think pretty much napalmed any bridge to rebuilding that relationship.
I think both parties won out.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And you can't really blame him, right? I mean, if you were really going to get traded a year ago, and then you might have been traded this year. But, you know, whoever's going to get Bobby Ryan is going to get a very good player.
They will be.
And obviously, he was a huge part of the Ducks' success, even though it was limited in his time there. But he's another guy that's in play here.
And he has, and I just tweeted about this earlier in the week, if the Jets fans are clamoring for a guy like Bobby Ryan on the squad, and who wouldn't face on his talent level? Based on the fact that the Jets have a pretty close relationship with Randy Carlyle, and Randy Carlyle was on the outs with Bobby Ryan, I would think that they'd probably stay away from the perceived character issues if they do or do not exist.
Bobby Ryan's a bit of a complex guy.
Well, if you read the article on ESPN about him, he had a very difficult upbringing.
Yeah.
And you can't blame him, actually. It's a terrible story. If you have a chance, Remus isn't here today, but just Google it. Pull it up on ESPN and... Take a read, and it's extensive. And his dad,
Richie, on the topic of Bobby Ryan, you have to wonder if Lou Lamoriello and the Devils would be interested in him, knowing that Parise is not going to come back. He's from New Jersey, American guy, and again, I'm just saying this off the top of my head. There's going to be a lot of teams, like there are a lot of teams interested in Nash, even though Nash is going to control where he goes.
Yep.
A lot of teams will be interested in Bobby Ryan. Mm-hmm. Guys like Jordan Staal, Bobby Ryan, Zach Parise, these are the cream of the crop here.
That's right.
These guys just don't come around a lot. And if you look at some of the other guys that are available, I wrote an article about the UFA forwards. One of them's already been signed. Jarrett Stoll re-signed with 3 years with the LA Kings. A lot of these guys are going to be tough for the Jets to get, and they might not have interest in some of these guys. But when you have guys like this become available, like a Ryan Suter, like a Zach Parise, like a Bobby Ryan, there's going to be 10 to 15 teams that are seriously considering these guys. So
everybody will make a call on Suter and Parise because they only cost you money.
Right.
Ryan will be a little more restricted because people will probably make a call on him, but then they'll want significant assets back.
It'll cost you a player, and it'll cost you a pretty decent cap hit. I just tweeted out on @IllegalCurve, so go to our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve, and you can find the article about Bobby Ryan there and his difficult childhood, as we alluded to.
His name is actually Stevenson.
That's right. His birth name was Bobby Stevenson, and then complications arose in his life that ended up with him changing his name to Bobby Ryan. So that'll be interesting. Personally, I hope everything happens on July 1st. That would make it really ideal for us, given that we're going to be on that special show next Sunday morning, 9 a.m. till 12:30 p.m., live at the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe.
I don't think there's going to be any shortage of stuff for us to talk about, especially as it relates to the Jets.
Oh, certainly not. Certainly won't be any shortage whatsoever. There never has been. Other trades from last night in the NHL. Let's talk about the Mike Ribeiro trade, because that's an interesting one. Mike Ribeiro goes from Dallas to the Washington Capitals.
Well, that never would happen if Dale Hunter was coach. I'll tell you that much.
Well, because Mike Ribeiro is not Dale Hunter's kind of guy. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
In exchange for Cody Eakin,
former Legal Curve guest.
Really?
Yep.
I don't remember that one.
Yes, he was on the show. Yep.
Okay, I believe you. Anyways, Cody Eakin goes to the Dallas Stars, and I believe a draft pick as well. Let me just pull that up. But that was another interesting move that was made. Talk it through from both sides.
Washington taking on Ribeiro, I have to say I don't really understand it. You know, they were moving towards getting
Cody Eakin and a second round pick goes back to Dallas. So Mike Ribeiro to Washington in exchange for Cody Eakin and a second round pick.
I don't understand that one in terms of Ribeiro. I mean, Ribeiro is a skilled player. He's a very good passer. He sees the ice extremely well. He weighs about 140 pounds. He plays like he weighs 140 pounds.
Meaning he's soft?
Yeah, he's soft. He rubs some teammates the wrong way. He rubs the other team certainly the wrong way. He sees the ice as well. Great hands, but he's not going to go into traffic to score. And his skill level and his hockey IQ, it's through the roof.
Is his compete level high?
No, it's not that high. It's really not that high. And he's a pending UFA after this next season, making $5 million in a cap hit. So you're taking on Ribeiro, where you have some guys who can play the middle, whether it be, you know, obviously Backstrom is your number one guy, whether you throw a guy like Marcus Johansson, you throw a guy like Brooks Lake, clearly they want to improve their secondary center position.
And Semin is not coming back.
Semin's likely not coming back.
Well, so how much does Semin leaving and Ribeiro coming in, how do those two play off of one another?
They're such different players. You know, Ribeiro's a
pass-first
player.
But you are replacing offense there.
Right. Ribeiro's a pass-first player. Semin's a shoot-first player. Yeah, you are replacing offense, sure. But you're replacing offense in a similar flaky way, really. And you're giving up Cody Eakin, a guy who was an active player. He played in the WHL.
Like
seen
his
him
game.
Play. He's a good player. I think he's certainly going to be an NHLer. The question is he a third or a second liner? I think he can possibly be a second liner. He's going to be cheap. He's a great move for Dallas. I think for Dallas, this is a win. Yep. I mean, you don't have to have a winner and loser in every trade, but I think for this trade, Dallas, to me, does better than does Washington. And for Washington, you have to wonder. You've brought in Dale Hunter, and you've kind of changed the way you're going to play. But if you're bringing in Mike Ribeiro, then you're probably going back and reverting back to what you were doing before in more of the Bruce Boudreau way. It seems an odd move for the vision of the Washington Capitals. For Dallas, I like the move. I think they did well.
And Mike, it should be noted here that, you know, a guy like Mike Ribeiro, good, you know, he does have good hands, and he'll put up some points, and he'll be able to contribute on the power play, and he does replace that offense by Semin. But again, not a physical guy. And not a guy that's, you know, known for, you know, being a two-way player. So in that sense, and you're paying him a lot of money. So in that sense, it's not the type of move that really stands out at you as really being a smart move for George McPhee. I guess it makes sense in the sense that they want to be sure that they're locking up a guy. He's another guy that there aren't a lot of guys that can put up his offensive numbers maybe, but for his price, I'd have to agree with Richie that this isn't necessarily a move that I'm going to say this was a huge score for the Washington Capitals. I like Ribeiro, but again, as far as being a team player, there's been problems with Ribeiro dating back to his Montreal Canadiens days.
It'll be interesting who becomes the head coach in Washington, because they're going to inherit Ribeiro, because we still don't know who the head coach is going to be there. I mean, so that'll be another element that you have to add in there. But if they're trying to replicate the Bruce Boudreau era there in Washington.
I don't know what they're doing anymore in Washington.
Well, you know what? It was almost a disaster of a year that turned out half decent in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, everything is sort of up in the air. You know, if there's a master plan, it's hard to pinpoint what that plan would be. But we will find out as soon as they hire a head coach. Things should begin to crystallize for the Washington Capitals.
Apparently, they're interviewing Mike Havlin for that position.
Mike Havlin, formerly of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Interviewed with the Jets last year.
That's right. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the free agent signings that occurred yesterday. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Minutes before 2 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, a couple of free agent signings took place last night as the draft was underway. The first one, the one I'll start with at least, in Colorado, Matt Duchene re-signs with the Colorado Avalanche. 2 years, $7 million.
I don't mind that deal because I think Matt Duchene needs to, you know, kind of show what he is. He's got the skill level. He's a beautiful skater, great stick handler, sees the ice well, does all those things, and can be an all-around terrific player. But he hasn't necessarily reached that potential yet.
And would you say he's regressed?
I don't know if he's regressed, but it's been 3 years, and he hasn't maybe taken that next step. So a two-year deal similar to what the Jets did here with Bogosian.
Yep.
You've kind of gone both ways. You've had good years. You've had bad years. Let's take 2 years so you're not worried about your contract next year, and let's see what you can do. And if you're going to be that player, we'll be happy to pay you. But if you're not going to be that player, we don't want to lock up long-term to you. And I think that, and for Duchene, you know, the risk is that he performs poorly and doesn't make a lot of money and doesn't have that long-term security. The reward is if he performs well, he's going to make himself a boatload of money.
Yep.
So this is a completely, I think, fitting contract. And actually, what I like by Greg Sherman, who's made some questionable moves, he doesn't lock himself up here. He wants to see what DeShane really is, and if he's the guy, then if he's as good as they think he can be, they'll be happy to pay him. But if he's not, you don't take the 10-year, 8-year, 6-year risk on him.
Matt Duchesne, 58 games played last year, 28 points. That's down from the year before where he was 80 games played and 67 points. Mm-hmm. So certainly something was off for Matt Duchesne last year.
He didn't have a good year last year. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And you asked if he's regressed, and you know, based on his point production, yeah, it's pretty obvious that he did. And Richie's right. Greg Sherman here of the Colorado Avalanche GM is seeing what he's got here, and it is similar to Bogo and Blake Wheeler. And you know, you talk about the 2-year deal, Richie. Blake Wheeler has, based on how much money he's making, you know, has definitely proven that he can get more money once the second year of his contract expires.
Wheeler's also a little bit further along, as he in terms of contract status. So Bogo
Duchesne's only 21 years old.
We're both coming off entry-level deals. But yeah, same idea with Wheeler, exactly.
Yeah, I like Duchesne. I mean, Duchesne's the type of guy that the Avalanche obviously drafted really high in the first round, second overall or third overall.
And
he was drafted very high, and you know, he's going to be a key piece here, you know. You know, we haven't even really mentioned about the NHL awards, probably because we're not a big fan of them. But Gabriel Landeskog, wow, he's a good player. He won Rookie of the Year, and you know, Landeskog and Stastny and Duchesne. I mean, the Avalanche to me are a team that's on the up and up.
Well, you mentioned
they're you know, very weak. You know, unfortunately on the back end, and they're going to struggle to score goals. I mean, they're not going to be a playoff team most likely next year. But for as far as the contract goes, I mean, you a guy's coming off a 28 point season, but you know, there's a real high upside, and he's still a prospect at this point when you're, you know, 20, 21 years old. You know, that's what you're going to do. You're going to sign him to 2 years.
Well, it depends. If he's a Tavares type, and Tavares was drafted a pick ahead of him, if you become a dominant force, you're going to sign you more long-term.
Right.
And they look at Colorado's contract stress status for 2014-15, so that's two seasons after the next two seasons, they have a total of less than $9 million on the cap. So they have a lot of flexibility in that point in time, and that at the end of the 2014 season, both Gabriel Landeskog and Matt Duchesne will be RFAs. They're probably their two most offensively talented players. And at that point, they'll hope that their rebuild's a little bit further along, and they can give them big money if it appears that they deserve it. Landeskog, I think, certainly will deserve it. He's a beauty.
But is David Jones making more money than Duchesne?
He is, but it's different statuses, too, in terms of entry-level deals and all that. The other point to make here, as he is, you mentioned Paul Stastny. Well, Colorado, and I love Paul Stastny's game back a couple years ago, but he hasn't progressed. In fact, he's regressed quite significantly. And I think what happens is a guy making $6.6 million in Paul Stastny signed to a long-term deal after entry-level success.
They learned their lesson.
Has given them pause.
Yep.
And with pause, makes them think, okay, maybe the guarantees we gave to Paul Stastny didn't serve him or us well. Let's take a different approach here and sign Duchesne to a 2-year deal, and that factors into their decision-making, you'd think.
Duchesne, I mean, you know, if you're the Colorado Avalanche or a fan of the Colorado Avalanche, you need Duchesne to recapture some of that glory. Putting him and Landeskog on the same at the same team, those are two dangerous players.
Yes, but different players and dangerous players.
Different players, yes, but dangerous players. But I mean, you know, if you had told Greg Sherman last year that Matt Duchesne was going to regress to this point, he would have thought you were crazy coming off of that career year that he had in his second year in the NHL.
You know, Drew, talking about the NHL draft, Tavares was also obviously taken number one in 2009. Some people were saying that Duchesne wasn't that far away from Tavares. Well, 3 years later, it's very clear Tavares is one of the best players in the league, period.
Yeah.
I mean, what he's doing in the Islanders, no offense to Matt Molson or P.A. Parenteau, but you know, we saw the Jets and the Islanders play. John Tavares is a heck of a player. He's a lock for Sochi 2014 Canadian team. So, you know, Duchesne is coming around a little bit slowly. And, you know, the Colorado Avalanche, again, one of those teams that got a lot of good young players currently playing for them. But they're a team that's years away.
Yes.
You know, I look at the Avalanche and the Jets, I believe, are you know, under the new alignment, will be in the same conference as the Avalanche. Mm-hmm. Another team that's 2 or 3 years away from being a serious playoff team.
I guess it depends on if they define conferences or divisions. They'll be in the West. I don't think they'll be in the same division.
Yeah, okay. I don't think they'll be in the same division.
But the point was really that they're another team like the Jets who, The Avalanche, that's a team that I'd be pretty confident is going to be one of the bottom five teams. You know, no offense to Avalanche fans. It's just, you know, they didn't expect Paul Stastny to take the step back. They didn't expect Matt Duchene to come along this slowly. And then, you've got, mediocre goaltending and not a lot happening on the back end. So, you know, really, this signing is, I see the Duchene signing, I kind of go, ho-hum, signed up to 2 years. But that's not to take anything away from him. I think he's a really good hockey player, and I really like his game.
Other agreements made yesterday, the Los Angeles mm-hmm. Kings signed two of their unrestricted free agents, Jarrett Stoll and Colin Fraser. Jarrett Stoll gets 3 years, $9.75 million. He turns 30 on Sunday.
Yep.
Colin Fraser gets 2 years and $1.65 million. That means the only player from the LA Kings who potentially is an unrestricted free agent is Dustin Penner.
Right.
Yeah. Let's start with Jarrett Stoll. 3 years, $9.75 million, third line center on the Kings team. Is that right?
He probably would have got more in the free agency. He'd probably not deserve more, but he probably would have got more on the open market. Happy with the situation there. Better off as a third line center than a second line center because his skill level isn't as high as, obviously, as Mike Richards and many other second line centers in the National Hockey League. On a good team, he's a third line center. He's a good faceoff guy, not a great skater. He's responsible defensively. He's got a booming shot. He can play second power play if you need him to. Can play power play if you need him to. But he's not going to produce a ton of points. He's going to be in around the 40 range. He's going to do all the little things. He's good in the room. He's in great shape. He takes care of himself. All the attributes that you want from a guy. You're signing him to a three-year deal, so you're going to get him until he's about 33. You're not tying an older guy up long-term. No issues with that at all. Colin Fraser going to center your fourth line. You're paying him $8.25 a year. That's just over the minimum. You're keeping your team intact from last year. Both of these deals, I thought, were completely fine.
Yeah, like the signings. Jarrett Stoll is a guy that I would have probably liked to see on the Jets. I wrote that article, as I mentioned before, but it was a no-brainer, Richie. They were going to re-sign him. He got his first cup. Everyone knew that he was going to re-sign in L.A., and I think he's making similar amount of money that he was making before. And, you described all of his talents and all that. I can't elaborate on that, and I agree with that. Drew, back to what you said, you have to wonder if maybe the Jets are going to try to replace one guy from Winkler with another guy from Winkler and Dustin Penner. You never know, but...
His cap hit actually was going down from 3.6 to 3.25.
You're talking about Jarrett Stoll, is there?
Yeah.
What do you think about Penner? If they signed Stoll and they signed Fraser, does that tell you that maybe the writing's on the wall for Penner?
They have cap space. Do they sign Penner? They probably see if there's any other free agents that can maybe fill that slot, and if there aren't, then they go back to Penner. You don't give Penner more than 2 years. The guy is rests on his laurels, put it that way, and I don't think you can. Sure, he played well in the playoffs there, but he wasted a couple. He wasted a season and a half or a season at a trade deadline in Los Angeles. Excuse me, and it sure is easy to look good when you're playing with Mike Richards and Jeff Carter.
Right.
True enough. Anyways, why don't we go to break? When we come back, we're going to rejoin Kyle Kozier down in Pittsburgh at the NHL Draft. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 1 hour left to go, live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A programming note, next Saturday, 9 a.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It is our NHL free agency preview show, 9 to noon next Saturday. Then a special edition of our program, 9 a.m. Sunday, Canada Day, live from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. 9 a.m. till 12:30 p.m. in the afternoon. We will have you covered on all of the day's news from the NHL free agency as it gets underway.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head back out to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and we catch up with the Illegal Curve scouting correspondent. He's been at the draft for the last few days, Kyle Kozier. Kyle, anything changed in your life in the last 90 minutes or so?
Not much. We're just taking a little walk around Pittsburgh. Just a lot of NHL people around, so walk around with Tom and just he's over talking to some of the Maple Leaf staff here, and just standing basically outside the Pirates ballpark and enjoying the nice day.
Sounds reasonable. We spoke a lot about the first round of the draft when we had you on earlier in the program. Just wanted to talk maybe about either some of the late first round picks or the second round picks. You know a lot of these guys. You've spent a lot of time monitoring the junior programs both in Canada and in the United States. Does anybody jump out at you as a guy that a team really got good value for, either in second, third, later in the draft?
Well, I tell you what. one of the guys that was sort of bandied about, actually, in this sort of question, is the Jets third rounder, Scott Kozmichuk, is a 30-goal guy from the OHL, and a lot of people sort of had him in the, including Central Scouting, as a first-round guy, especially the his goal-scoring touch there. And he had over 100 penalty minutes. His guy's kind of willing to drop the gloves. So might be a steal, and it's kind of nice that it went to the Jets.
Any reason in particular why he fell all the way to the third round?
You know, the one thing people kept mentioning is there are so many Europeans taken, and more Europeans taken than what people sort of what people expected, and sort of with an early run on him, and especially the run, you know, I guess starting with the depth pick of Hampus there, just sort of threw people's draft list off, and it sort of, as you probably seen happen in the NHL before, when one team kind of catches the sniffles, the rest of the league gets a cold. So everybody wanted to get on that bandwagon and kind of pushed him down a little farther. Another guy is that, you know, Dalton Troer, that the Canadians ended up getting, was also, you know, considered to be sort of a end of the first round type of guy, and you know, he fell into the second. So you never know. You spend a lot of time reading these mock drafts, and you sort of start to accept it as gospel, but when you get down to the draft day, everybody's got a different list, and I mean, that's just sort of how things play out.
You talk about, Kyle, it's hard to obviously pick winners and losers of a draft that, you know, you'll need years for things to years before you can make that comment. But just from a first glance, was there any team that you thought, or that the talk around the Console Energy Center was a team that did really well and maybe can go home with a big smile on their face?
Well, I tell you what, for the local team, the Penguins really did well. They, you know, they made a big splash in the first round with their trade. They got, you know, at least reasonable value. Jordan saw that, you know, the pick coming back is nice, and you know, and picking up Brandon Sutter and another prospect there. But, and you know, all the Penguins fans were, you know, some of them weren't too happy to see Stahl go, but they were happy that the team made a splash. It really kind of sparked up the event for them. A lot of excitement around the city and a lot of excitement around the ring. So got to count them as a winner as well. And you know, we're just having a couple conversations with some Kings staff here, and again, I'm not trying to shoot the Winnipeg horn here, but they really considered the Jets to have had a successful draft too. And the thing that keeps getting brought up is that just sort of the change in demeanor of the draft from the Atlanta regime to Winnipeg. You know, whereas Winnipeg seems to be, you know, building a contending team sort of one brick at a time. It's not going for the high risk, high reward home run shots that Atlanta was looking for. And again, not to knock Atlanta here, but just saying that. You know, Jets are going that more steady, at a steady pace, where they're building a team that's going to contend every year for several years instead of, you know, experiencing the highs and lows. So other people in hockey seem to be impressed with the way that Chevalier is or the approach that he's taking. And so we've got to count them as a winner too, and just that they have a plan and they're sticking to it.
Kyle, you mentioned the Los Angeles Kings. They took Tanner Pearson with the last pick of the first round, and obviously some Jets fans were hoping that maybe he would squeak to the second round and they might be able to get him at 39th overall because of the fact that he played in Barrie on a line with Mark Scheifele. Why did the Kings decide to maybe pick him a little bit higher than he was ranked? Because a lot of people had him ranked, you know, early in the second round.
I really think that sort of falls to that best player available theory there. You know, we recently had a Veritas camp, and one of the Kings scouts was there, and they said that's really the path they'd like to take if they see a guy that they've identified as a good player and he happens to be available when he comes up. Well, you know, regardless of where he was ranked, they're going to take him. So not really addressing any specific need for them, but obviously there's a guy that they had identified as someone that could probably help the team down the road, and certainly had some nice intangibles there, and would, you know, if that core stays intact in Los Angeles, it would certainly fit in well with them.
Kyle, a guy like Tanner Pearson, he was passed over for 2 years. Is that a concern? And have you learned anything why he was passed over in the draft? Obviously, his numbers this past year were a lot better than his previous 2 years with Barrie.
I really just think it kind of falls to, you know, the strengths of previous drafts. So not to say he was a bad player before, but you know, the last couple of drafts have had a little bit more depth. Like, look at a team like Edmonton, who ended up picking a couple 20-year-olds. So that kind of speaks, and guys are really off, not really off the map, but I mean, they didn't show up on any list and that kind of thing. So a guy like Pearson, who does have some skill, kind of slid up farther because, you know, the depth of the draft just wasn't there. Whereas that, you know, as he was developing, obviously, you know, a bit of a later developer. So obviously you saw that he had some value now. And I think that was sort of one of the themes of this draft is, because of the general weakness of, you know, again, as you got deeper into it, the you started to see some picks like that that were like developers getting snagged because it sort of expanded the pool that teams were drawing upon.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Illegal Curve's scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier, live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Kyle, you mentioned the Los Angeles Kings scouts. You know, in terms of management, they made two re-signings yesterday, re-signing Jarrett Stoll to a three-year contract and as well as Colin Fraser to a two-year deal. Can you talk a bit about the impression of hockey people on those re-signings yesterday?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one more time? I just walked past the scalper here, and he was kind of barking at us.
How much is he asking for the Pirates ticket?
Man, it seems like there's they're going pretty high. There are a ton of Detroit fans in town, which I didn't know that the team traveled that well. So I guess everybody's sort of eager to get out of Motown.
Yeah, okay, but the question was, Kyle, in terms of the Los Angeles Kings you mentioned before, the scouts, they made two re-signings yesterday, Colin Fraser and Jarrett Stoll, two Oilers you're probably quite familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about the impression around the hockey world of their thoughts of those two players being re-signed by the Kings?
I think, generally very positive. Like, the money and the term for Stoll seems pretty reasonable, especially considering what, you know, some other players were getting around the league. So Stoll's a guy that can help you in various areas. Stoll has that big shot on the power play and really had a strong playoff. So I think it's somewhat important for the Kings to lock those guys up. And as we all know, I think any team around the league would be super excited to get two ex-Oilers in the span of a couple of days. I mean, that just, stuff like that just doesn't fall into your lap. So if you can lock those guys up, you got to do it. And again, Fraser, too, for a guy that sort of had, you know, fallen out of favor in Edmonton and wasn't really, doing much. And, again, play well for the Kings, and I think to get him signed up, too, is nice. And, again, just outside of the hockey part of it, the optics of it are good, too. It, you know, keeps fans happy, and hopefully, Los Angeles can keep the interest in the team, and I think that's a big part of it, is signing your key players like that.
Kyle, a guy I want to ask you about went number 49 overall to the Detroit Red Wings. He's played in Halifax with the in the QMJHL. He is the alphabetically impossible Martin Frick. What can you tell our listeners about him as a player? He has a lot of scoring potential. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, definitely a lot of potential. And speaking of the name, some guys say Frick and some say Frick. So I'm not sure which is correct. But I mean, you can probably roll the dice and choose either one. But as another guy that, in the earlier thing when I talked about Pugat being ranked really high, like, you know, two or three in some list from a year or year and a half ago, and, Frick was another guy that was right up there, top five for sure, and again, just sort of fell off, and I think part of it was, showed a lot of promise early, and then never really, his development path wasn't that smooth line upward. It was sort of had plateaus and peaks and valleys. So I think that sort of knocked him down where, other guys that were behind him originally just had a more of that linear upward development path and they ended up going past him. But, leave it to Detroit to snag a guy like that pretty late, as it often happens. I imagine it'll work out for them in the end.
A player that the Calgary Flames drafted, and they say could be the best player in the draft. Never heard that one before. Mark Jankowski seems like the epitome of a risk-reward prospect. Can you talk a bit about him and what the impression was around the draft tables there?
Well, initially there was a lot of who, and then it comes out afterwards that his grandpa was apparently a longtime Flames scout, which likely has something to do with it, so probably a little bit of inside information there. This guy's going to college, plays at Banta College in Quebec. It's a residential school, but apparently they have a relatively strong team. And when I was still in Grand Forks, I used to try and get them to come out to the Grand Forks Midget AAA tournament all the time. They were never able to come, but sort of was an intriguing program in that they're sort of starting to put kids in. They get some attention from USHL scouts and as well as college. So Jankowski, he very well might end up being a really good player, but sort of a kid that hasn't played at the highest levels yet. So I think it'll be important to watch him in college to see what he does. So the Flames, I guess they obviously saw something they like and they went for it. And so it's always nice when it works out, but there certainly is some risk involved there. You're not really sure what you're getting because you really haven't seen him play against a lot of elite competition.
Kyle, when New Jersey Devils general manager Lou Lamoriello went up to the draft podium and then passed it over to David Conte, and then he drafted Stephane Matteau. I thought, you know, that was fairly ironic, and I bet you were thinking the same thing, considering that his dad scored that goal back in 94 against the Devils. But what was the reaction to that pick around the draft in Pittsburgh, and what do you like or dislike about Matteau's game?
You know, well, I was just sitting in the media area, and there's a lot of I told you so's, and it was sort of just one of those scripts that you kind of like to see how it plays out like that. As for a player, you know, another pretty hard-nosed kid. He goes to the net hard. He has a real nice touch around the net. Not the type of guy that's going to, you know, beat a goalie from 35, 40 feet out, but it's sort of that Ryan Smith type of skill set where he's got, you know, pretty good hands and tight things for rebounds and that kind of thing, kind of be a pest type of player. So really a guy that, you know, if you stand back and think about it, fits in really well with that sort of your prototypical New Jersey type of player. And, boy, you know, again, he's going to go play in the Quebec Major Junior League, kind of spurned UND. So not a popular guy around Grand Forks, but, again, I think he'll have a pretty successful, you know, junior career moving forward. And, again, seems like a real devil type of guy.
Kyle, you mentioned that he's not popular around Grand Forks. Is Richie still popular around Grand Forks, though?
And I tell you what, the legend of AP has really only increased the star that shines over Richard Paulus' name in Grand Forks.
AP being Richard's brother. Kyle, thanks very much for your coverage from Pittsburgh all weekend. We'll see you in Winnipeg next week.
I'll be there. Let me know if you need anything else today. I'm happy to come back on.
We'll let you know if you have anything worthwhile. Just shoot us an email and we'll hook it up.
Yeah. Kyle, thanks for all the work that you've done for Legal Curve, and thanks to Tom Lynn as well. You did an awesome job covering it for the website and coming on in the radio show. So I got to give you props on behalf of all of us here.
Great job.
Yeah, our pleasure. We're actually going to do up a day two report here, and we're still kind of tracking down some more audio here, so I'll send along anything I get.
Terrific. Sounds very good. Thanks very much, Kyle. Kyle Kozier, a Legal Curve scouting correspondent, walking the streets of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania at the conclusion of the 2012 NHL Draft. Let's go to break. Still much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our scouting correspondent, Kyle Kozier. He provided some great insight into everything draft-related, both here on this program and on the website, www.illegalcurve.com. If you want to see any of Kyle's handiwork, along with some of the guest posts on the website from Tom Lynn, former assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild, be sure to surf your way over to www.illegalcurve.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve, and follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. One of the trades we haven't spoken about yet, it's been busy, Sergei Bobrovsky going from the Philadelphia Flyers to the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for a number of draft picks, a second, I believe, and a third this year and a third next year, but I'll double check that.
I think it was that high, Drew.
Well, I'll double check.
I've got a lot of random picks today.
Well, there's been a lot going on. My brain is...
In terms of the Bobrovsky acquisition.
Bobrovsky for... A second round pick and a pair of fourth round picks. Sorry, I was one round off.
Well, it was a significant round though. Sergei Bobrovsky.
You're the guy who's been saying there's no difference between a third and a fourth round pick the entire show.
I never said that.
No, I made it up and I pretended you just said.
I never said that.
Okay, fine.
Sergei Bobrovsky has talent, and he's a guy who you're gonna. It's an interesting dynamic. Are the Columbus Blue Jackets gonna hitch their wagon to Steve Mason for another season? You'd hope not if you're a Columbus fan. And then the question is Bobrovsky the answer?
Seems like they gave up a lot for Bobrovsky.
Well, I thought it was a little much.
I mean, a second-round pick and a couple fourths. Yeah, I mean, he's still young. Yeah, it's probably a little bit much, considering what they gave up for...
Gustafson.
No, what's his name? Lindback. Yeah, so if you're giving up more than that, yeah, I'd agree with you there, Drew. A little bit of an overpay, but Columbus doesn't know what they're doing for the most part anyways.
Do you think Paul Holmgren just, like, as soon as Scott Housen calls him, do you think Paul Holmgren, like, puts him on hold to laugh at him, or does he just laugh at him in the background?
That's a good question. It's a fair question. But, you know, the Bobrovsky thing, the question is, are you going to go in there with two youngsters and just call Brian Burke in Toronto and ask him how Gustafson and Reimer turned out? And it's very similar. I mean, are you going to go in with two youngsters who aren't the Carey Price type, but the guys who are, you know, star-level talents? If that's the case, you know, if Mason is poor again, which is probably likely, then is Bobrovsky the answer? Physically, he could be the answer. But the problem is, if they're both not the answer, they're both too young, and you have an issue there. And if you bring in If you bring in a veteran goalie, then what do you do with one of them? Well, you just traded for Bobrovsky, so you're probably not going to deal him. You're going to keep him in the NHL. And what about Mason? Mason's contract, for all intents and purposes, is untradeable.
And Richie, this just came in from Rick Ralph of TSN, who I guess we have some Brian Burke audio, says that the Jets actually approached Gustafson. This is according to Brian Burke, because they wanted to sign him as a backup, which is
The Leafs about Gustafson.
Right, which is not a big shocker.
No, and that's exactly what they're trying to do. But, you know, back to Columbus, then, you know, you have the issue of they also drafted a goalie, I believe, second round. If I recall correctly, and I'll double check on that.
I think you're right about that.
So you have, here you go. So you have Mason at the one more year at 2.9, Bobrovsky at 1.75.
So Columbus drafted Oscar Dansk with the first pick of the second day.
Yeah. So again, you traded a second round pick for a goalie, and then you'd use a second round pick
to take a goalie.
On a goalie.
And it's not like Dansk and Bobrovsky wouldn't it would be, you know, Bobrovsky's not going to be retired by the time Dansk is ready to go.
No,
they're both young guys
too, but it's just you need more talent. You shouldn't be using second round picks on a goalie like that, especially when you're trading one for a goalie.
That's what I'm saying.
Columbus once again taking a questionable avenue to what they believe to be the road to success, and I think that road is probably going to nowhere.
Right, and we know that Ilya Bryzgalov is the number one guy. He signed to the 9-year deal. Bobrovsky had flashes,
yeah.
And he's, you know, he's in his mid-20s.
You're right. I mean,
he's been brought in. Steve Mason has been bad for several years now after having an unbelievable rookie year.
Yeah.
And you know, as far as the Columbus Blue Jackets are concerned, they didn't get Lynn back. They're not going to get other goalies that maybe they would have targeted. So, you give up the second round and round pick and some fourth rounders, I think that is too much
and
for Bobrovsky.
And you have to give up a conditional seventh for Gustafson and they give up second and 2/4.
Gustafson's a better goalie than Bobrovsky.
I don't know about that.
But there's not a huge difference.
I don't know about that, but they're not a second rounder and 2/4.
There's not difference. That size. Yeah. Granted, one's under contract and one isn't. But
sure, but I mean, you're not going to have to sign Gustafson to the money, the 1.75 that you're paying Bobrovsky based on what Gustafson's done so far in his career, which is very little.
Right.
So you shouldn't cost you more than $1 million maximum. I think even on a 2-year deal, maybe less. A 1-year deal, maybe about $1 million. You and I were talking about that off air before the show started. You're not giving him more than $1 million, and maybe for 2 years you'll give him a little bit less than that.
Yeah. But either way, he's not going to be a big ticket by any stretch for the Winnipeg Jets to try and re-sign Jonas Gustafsson.
Right. Drew, the best news for Columbus Blue Jackets fans, and there definitely is not a lot of that, is on defense. You've picked up Jack Johnson for Jeff Carter, and you've drafted Ryan Murray. You know, the defense, you got a lot of good prospects coming in the system and on defense. You know, aside from that, there's unfortunately not a lot to be excited about. As far as I'm concerned, again, they're going to be bottom five in the league next year.
Yeah, can Rick Nash get you a big haul of four prospects or two usable players and two prospects? And then you got a little bit of a stable there with Ryan Murray and John Moore, whether he materializes. He's a great skater, big, powerful guy, great skater. Ryan Johansson. You know, so you have some pieces there. But can you make a trade like New York offered you to kind of pump your system up? Then maybe. But, I mean, again, you're on another rebuilding course.
And you also have a terrible general manager, so there's no reason to have that much hope in him.
That's true also.
Another team that who's had a good first round that I liked is the Buffalo Sabres. They stopped the fall of Grigorenko. They took him 12th overall.
The truth is, when you have two first-round picks, Drew, which is what you're alluding to there, you take a risk on one of them with such upside as Grigorenko. Why not?
That's right.
Why not?
You know, Grigorenko, you know, a lot of talk about his attitude, maybe about his birth certificate. Maybe he's 20 years old already and he's not 18 years old, which to me was bizarre.
Who cares?
If he's 20 years old, then he's that much closer to being in the NHL.
Would it be 18 or 19, not 18 or 20? Where's the two-year gap?
I honestly, it's Russian birth certificate. So you know, I think there's forgeries out there
it's
on the market.
It's beyond our expertise.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a birth certificate expert here. And then they also two picks later they traded up with Calgary in order to draft Zemgus Girgensons.
Yes.
So I mean, besides having two of the best names in the draft, both of those guys, those are two guys who I think, you know, will help Buffalo. And Buffalo is a team that's going to be trending upwards. I know they spent a boatload of money last year.
Most of it foolishly.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is, anytime, you know, you have Lindy Ruff as your general manager, this is a good draft. Lindy Ruff is your head coach, Darcy Regier is your general manager. This, to me, is a good draft for the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I don't mind the risk there. You know, you have a lot of talent on the team. You have guys who are going to be there for a while, and the Vanek's and the Myers and the Ryan Miller and such. So it's not a bad idea to take a risk there.
Right, and we had Kyle on a couple of weeks ago to talk about Girgensons, who's in Dubuque, of the United States, coming from Dubuque of the United States Hockey League. Kyle obviously worked with the United States Hockey League. The Sabres did well. Grigorenko, I think, is the type of guy a team like the Sabres can take a risk on. I mean, we had Corey Pronman on last week, and he had him ranked, I believe, 2. And in his top 100 rankings, but
because
again,
skill,
big,
as he,
yeah, skill wise,
is not
it's
a question.
The attitude.
Yeah.
And if he and if his head's on straight, then Buffalo's getting a steal at number 12
yeah,
overall.
And when you have two first round picks, isn't that the type of team that should be taking that risk when you have two first rounders?
I agree.
Take a risk on Grigorenko.
I agree.
I mean, you know, there's definitely not going to be any problem with that guy turning out to be a talented forward, and you know the Sabres. They have to restockpile their cupboard, unfortunately.
Quick note about the Columbus Blue Jackets. Our good friend Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Post-Dispatch just tweeted that Ottawa, there was a lot of talk about Ottawa maybe being destination for Rick Nash. Apparently, Ottawa is not on Rick Nash's approved trade list, so he would have to alter that list before he would be traded to Ottawa.
I don't see him not saying yes to Ottawa deal. He's an Ontario boy.
I would think that he, if Ottawa's serious enough and there's a deal to be made there, he would end up saying yes.
I think he'd have no problem playing with Spezza, Richie.
Oh, who wouldn't have a problem playing with Spezza?
Exactly.
The rumor that was going around was Ottawa was putting together a deal involving Zibanejad and Robin Lehner.
Robin Lehner and Nick Foligno, was that tossed in there as well?
It's possible. I would think there would have had to have been a third piece to that puzzle.
A second shooter, yeah.
Yeah, so you know, that's
I hope Ottawa, that an offer.
Second spitter.
Ottawa can get Nash for that, I think they're going to do that 7 days a week.
I think with Ben Bishop in the picture now and Anderson in the picture and Leonard's maybe his attitude questions, Foligno's offensive limitations, and Zibanejad is going to be a nice player, but to be able to get a 35-40 goal scorer and put him with Jason Spezza, I think if it's those three players, I think Ottawa makes that deal. I assume that Columbus is going to hold out for a fourth because that's kind of the package they had from the Rangers that they turned down, foolishly turned down, I may say.
Rangers package was what? Chris Kreider.
Yeah. I remember the exact details of it, but I think JT Miller was in there. It's a big prospect.
Yeah.
I forget if they...
Probably a draft pick.
Davinsky was in there. I think another defenseman was in there. It was a big-time haul. I think it was 5 players was the rumor. Larry Brooks reported, maybe Drew, maybe you want to search that. We'll come back with it after the break. But it was a big package, and they turned it down. And I'm not sure if they're going to get equal value this time around.
Well, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll stick with Ottawa. I want to talk to you guys about the Erik Karlsson signing. We never did get our analysis of that. But much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. In the afternoon, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website is www.illegalcurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. One of the best of all time to make their way through Rumors Comedy Club, performing one final night tonight. That's Alonzo Bowden.
Hilarious at the Y Dinner.
Hilarious at the Y Dinner. Absolutely fantastic if you happen to be at the Y Dinner. Go see his entire stand-up routine tonight at Rumors. Not even sure there's any tickets available. Give him a call, 488-4520. If you're looking for something to do tonight, no better place to get your laugh on than at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club and the final night that Alonzo Bowden is in town. Richard.
The package that apparently was offered to the Columbus Blue Jackets prior to the trade deadline for Rick Nash was Brandon Dubinsky, defenseman Tim Erickson, who Calgary fans will know because he left Calgary to sign with the Rangers. He's an offensive puck-moving defenseman, good skater, needs to improve defensively. JT Miller, who's apparently very good, I haven't seen him play, very good prospect. He's a first-round pick from last year. Christian Thomas, who's the Rangers' second-round pick from last year, and their first-round pick this year.
What else did the Columbus Blue Jackets want here? That's a pretty good package to me.
It is, and you have to wonder what it is that they want. Maybe they want a little bit more of a high-end prospect with less players involved. That's the question, but you have to wonder if they're going to get a package of that level in these negotiations.
Richie, they're not trading from a position of strength.
Well, that's the problem.
Nash wants out of there.
That's the problem you have.
I mean, you're getting a pretty good package from the New York Rangers there, and I have to believe that the Rangers might be tweaking it and seeing, you know, talking, Glenn Sather might be talking to Scott Housen, you know, and trying to add something. Or
I think Glenn actually gave, I believe Glenn Sather gave Scotty Housen his start in hockey. Glenn was the GM of the Edmonton Oilers when Scott Howson began working for the Oilers farm team in the AHL, it was at that time, because the AHL and IHL merged, but it was the AHL for the Oilers farm team. Scotty Howson started working there and then worked his way up through the Oilers brass. So there certainly is a relationship there upon which to build.
You know, it really is bizarre what Scotty Howson's demanding. I mean, not like you said, not from a position of strength. So there's no rhyme or reason for how stubborn he's really being, and that's the word you can only use.
Maybe he gets a bigger haul, Drew. I mean, this is, you wait for Parise, you see where Parise goes, and somebody gets desperate. I think you could possibly get a haul, but the question is, can you get a haul as big of the one that you pass up at the trade deadline? That's the question.
Well, that'll be he's really staking the last little bits of his reputation on that.
Yes.
I mean, we all thought he should have been let go, released from his duties probably last year. Mm-hmm. Yep. And they're giving him another chance. Erik Karlsson, prior to winning the Norris Trophy, got a bit of a more expensive contract, prize than just the Norris Trophy, signing a 7-year, $45.5 million contract extension.
That's a lot of money.
With the Ottawa Senators. Just under $7 million a year, $6.5 million somewhere in that vicinity. That's a lot of money. What are your immediate thoughts on that contract extension?
I think he's arguably the best defenseman in the National Hockey League. You signed him through his prime for 7 years. Your cap hit isn't completely outrageous. I like the deal from Ottawa's perspective, from Carlson's perspective. You are getting security. They might, as Elliot Freeman said to us, and we've talked about in the show before, you might have a cap on contracts at 5 years, so you're going to get him for 2 more years of that deal. Than you maybe could otherwise. I think Ottawa's done fine here. I think he's one of the best defensemen. He's the best puck-moving defenseman in the National Hockey League. He has a tremendous poise. He can quarterback a power play. He can get the puck out of his own zone. He can churn through the neutral zone, both his skating and his passing. That's a guy you want to lock up long-term, a guy who's only going to get better. I like the deal.
Yeah, Erik Karlsson really, I mean, nobody was expecting his year this year. And, I mean, sometimes that happens with younger players, even though, you know, the Ottawa Senators have been gushing about him for years now. I don't think anybody was expecting an 80-point Norris Trophy season out of him. So, exactly, if there's one guy that you want to lock up on that team, it's Karlsson. Yeah. And, you know, the Senators, had a pretty good year last year. And, with Spezza, having a bounce-back year. Zibanejad, even though, he might be part of a package to get Rick Nash, there's other guys in place there. And, Phillips doesn't have very many years left. And Gonchar is, towards the end of his career. So he's the type of guy that they're going to build their, not just their defense around, their entire team around.
Think about it. It's a $6.5 million cap hit.
Yeah.
For 7 years. Right now, he's the eighth highest cap hit for a defenseman behind Brian Campbell, Drew Doughty, Zdeno Chara, Jay Bouwmeester, Dan Boyle, Dion Phaneuf, Wade Redden. If you think about it that way.
I love that Wade Redden's still in that list, by the way.
If you think about it that way, Drew, I mean,
he had a good year last year in the
NHL. He's right up there with the other guys, and he's only going to get better. I like the deal. I think it's a fair deal. I think it's a good deal. And I think both sides will be happy with it.
One last defenseman we can talk about. Keith Yandel for the Phoenix Coyotes is supposedly on the trade market.
Well, Keith Yandel, Drew, he's my prediction in our preseason comments for a backslide in terms of production. I didn't think he had as good of a year. He still put up points. He's very poor defensively, Drew. And the question is, with now adding Zdeněk Mihajlík back, are they trying to shore up their defense to a point where they don't want any guys who will give up significant matchup issues for them in their own zone? And the other question is, what can they get for him? Because a guy with his skill level, both on the power play and puck moving out of their own zone, what will the return be for a guy like that? Because there's many teams that are clamoring for a defenseman who can move the puck. So there's a number of angles and prongs to that situation. Don Maloney is pretty astute in terms of making trades. He's not going to get ripped off by any means. But I think Keith Yandel is actually expendable. I think he is a significant liability. And with Oliver Ekman-Larsson coming to be, I think that's the biggest issue here. Oliver Ekman-Larsson can be what they think Keith Yandel is, but better defensively and a little bit more consistent and dependable. And I think he's going to make Keith Yandel expendable. And I think they'll probably look to get some offense if they can.
Another player that was drafted, going back to the draft briefly, mm-hmm. Malcolm Subban.
Yep.
Boston Bruins took a goaltender there, PK's brother. It was a nice moment when you saw the two of them embrace each other.
Yeah, it's awesome.
There was obviously some significant brotherly love there, which is no surprise. But, Malcolm Subban versus PK Subban 6 times a year in the Northeast Division should make for some pretty entertaining hockey.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. I mean, obviously, PK Subban is on the Habs, And, you know, his dad, they were saying, is a big Habs fan as well. Obviously, the first Subban to be in the NHL. There's another Subban as well. I forget his first name, but there's another Subban that's, I believe, draft eligible next year. So that's fun. I mean, there's going to be... I mean, Malcolm Subban's not going to be in the NHL in the next couple of years.
Certainly not.
He's not going to be... They're not going to be able to see the Habs and Bruins and the Subban brothers play. But, yeah, why not? It's good for fans.
Yeah, no issue. You know, you're taking a goalie high in the first round, which is always risky, and you're taking a goalie when you already have Tuukka Rask under contract. But we know Tim Thomas is on his way out. And Boston has done pretty well with some of their drafts lately, drafting Dougie Hamilton, drafting Tyler Seguin. Obviously, this is a little more difficult because it's a little later on in the first round. But they seem to have their head on their shoulders. They have a lot of depth within their organization, certainly at forward. Dougie Hamilton will help on the back end for defense. Probably could use maybe another defenseman in the system. But they clearly see something in Malcolm Subban, and they say he's got the talent, and he's a little bit more even-mannered than his brother. So I think for a goaltender, that's important, though, Drew, because a little emotional goaltender can go both ways. But we've only heard good things about his talent level. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Bruins. And they're trying to add up talent at every level, right? They have a superstar in waiting in Tyler Seguin. They have a really good young player. Some say the best young defenseman not in the NHL in Dougie Hamilton. Then you could have a real young star in Malcolm Subban. Nothing wrong with a three-prong attack that way.
Speaking of Bruins goaltenders, Tim Thomas waived his no trade. Is that, you know, he's supposedly sitting out for the next year, but he waived his no trade. Is that for the Bruins to try and dangle him to a team that's looking just to get to the salary floor?
That may be the case, Drew. Maybe he wants to play. You never know.
You mean are you doubting the veracity of his beautifully worded Facebook statement?
I haven't read it myself.
Is there another one?
Oh, well, when he announced that he's going to take the year off, it's about...
Is he your friend or does he have his own page?
He's got his own page.
Is that your friend?
He's not my friend. It's about, he's taking a year off about so that he can reconnect with family, friends, and faith, while at the same time selling some sort of training equipment. Seems like a smart decision on his part. Why don't we go to break a little bit early? When we come back, we can do some schedule analysis. The 2012 schedule came out.
I don't like the schedule.
Well, let's talk about it. How about that?
Okay.
We'll come back, talk about the schedule, wrap it up with one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Again, a programming note. Next Saturday, 9 a.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our free agency preview show. Sunday, special edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Live on location from the Winnipeg Free Press Cafe. 9 a.m. till 12:30 in the afternoon. We will be your home for any and all free agency related moves. Saturday 9 a.m., Sunday 9 a.m., exclusively on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. The Winnipeg Jets schedule came out earlier this week alongside the rest of the NHL schedule. Richie, you said you didn't like the schedule.
Well, I thought there's a couple of issues. I don't understand why they give the Jets two afternoon games in the States on holidays. I mean, as a Jet fan,
that is true.
You can't watch those games. You're at work.
Monday, that is the Monday in January, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The Jets are going to be playing in Long Island.
Shouldn't there not be any games at all? Isn't that a national holiday? Like no one.
No, they play in the afternoon there.
It's a holiday, but it's not a solemn holiday, apparently. Yeah. And then Black Friday, which is the day after U.S. Thanksgiving, 2 o'clock start in Philadelphia. So, I mean, very odd.
You're talking about a 1 o'clock start here.
That's a 2 o'clock start, I think, in Winnipeg. Okay. 2 o'clock local,
so,
3 o'clock
Eastern.
People
are at work, so you shouldn't have Canadian teams playing in American holiday games.
It's happened before.
I just think it's stupid. You don't blame the Jets for the league. You know, I think the league's didn't do well in not having the Jets playing in Minnesota this year. You want to develop that rivalry a little bit more.
Yep.
You want to allow Jets fans to drive down there.
Well, those games against the Western Conference, you play each team in the Western Conference once, and you play three teams twice. Is there a format in determining who those teams are?
It's at large. It's described as, so it's kind of discretionary.
Well, it's basically random.
Like you're playing Detroit this year twice.
Right. And you're playing Detroit twice?
Last year you played in Detroit. Now you're playing home to Detroit, but the Detroit game there this year is an at-large game, I'd assume.
It is.
Right? So why not play in Minnesota, let the Jets fans drive down, create that little rivalry?
That's true. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
And the problem is, sorry to interrupt you, the problem is not the Jets by any means. It's all NHL.
Right.
The NHL, with a stupid schedule... Again, you look at the schedule this year if you're a season ticket holder and you say, okay, well, we're picking all the same Eastern Conference teams. That's the same schedule as last year. We get to see Carolina three times. Whoop-de-doo.
Including the home opener.
Three times for Florida. And you think to yourself, why is there not every team playing here once? Because that's how it used to be. Yeah. And you go, oh, I want the Lemieux game. I want the Gretzky game. I want this game.
That system was way better, by the way.
This year you'd say, you know, I want, you're not going to get, for example, Solani again. You're not going to get L.A. So you're not going to have somebody saying, I want the L.A. game, I want the Anaheim game. You're going to get Florida three times. The division-heavy schedule is not only flawed for entertainment purposes, it's flawed for division weakness and strength purposes as well in terms of competitive balance. This schedule needs to be changed for next year, but another year to bear with it.
And, Richie, I think that's why, Andrew, I think that's why you know, people are looking forward to it going to four conferences. And I think when the Jets' schedule came out, I looking at it from a fan... I wasn't overly excited about it. Obviously, Timo Solani isn't going to be coming here with the Anaheim Ducks. Fans weren't happy about that. But I think overall, five of the first seven games are home games. Good for Jets fans. Yeah. It looks like there isn't that much of a difference between the home stands and the away games they aren't as extended.
The longest road trip is six games. They have three 5-game road trips, and the longest home stand is 5 games.
A little more balanced than last year.
I thought the schedule was done better in that way.
For the Jets.
Exactly. And I like the kind of quirky things. Like I like the 9 o'clock start time in Winnipeg for double header of Hockey Day in Canada.
That is Hockey Day in Canada. The last game in Hockey Day in Canada is the Canucks at the Jets, that 9 o'clock start time.
What are alcohol sales going to be like in that second period?
I was going to say, that crowd, especially Vancouver, a team that we haven't seen yet in Winnipeg.
Like the Moose players.
The Moose players. That will be a heavily liquored up crowd, I would suspect. I hope that they would add additional security to the MTS Center for that game.
Yeah. Drew, I got to say quickly here, Richie, remember what you were going to say, but I think that you're right. I think that each team... From a fan perspective, you'd want to see each team. But I think from a division perspective, we're going to be in the Southeast Division one more year. You've got Eric Staal and Jordan Staal here in the home opener. Yeah. You've got the Tampa Bay Lightning on the New Year's Eve game. I always like that just because, you know, everyone goes out and parties for New Year's Eve after.
Or bad draws, like Carolina for home openers and Tampa Bay for New Year's Eve game is that. Now you have the cachet of the game itself.
I like it. This is why I like it, okay? To your average fan, you're going to say, I want to see Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
You're getting to see Steven Stamkos, but embrace the fact that you're in the Southeast Division this year. You're going to be in the Southeast Division. So for those fans that are saying, oh, I don't like Florida, I don't want to go see Florida. Well, you know, Florida's in our division. So look at it from a half-glass full point of view. And don't look at it from just necessarily the star power, but look at it from the quality of the games. The Winnipeg-Florida games were good last year.
Yeah, sure they were. I guess two bad teams playing. But St. Louis says he's another at-large game here. So they played here last year, so Jets are supposed to play there this year. So the St. Louis playing here this year is another at-large game.
Yeah, it's St. Louis is the at-large game.
Detroit.
Detroit is at the – and I believe Columbus. I think we play in Columbus.
That's right. Columbus, we're supposed to play home to them, so there is an at-large game.
Yeah.
So those are the three at-large games. Kind of blah. I don't love them. I do like how there's more afternoon games this year. It helps the kids get to the games.
Well, there's a ton of afternoon games this year. I'm just trying to look at it quickly. Well,
you had it here, Drew. You listed it yourself.
I know. I'm trying to find the information. Six afternoon Saturday games.
Yep.
So six of the there's 12 Saturday home games. Six of them are afternoon games. Sunday there's three afternoon games on the Sunday afternoon.
Yep.
Plus the New Year's Eve game.
I like that better.
So there's 10 home afternoon games this year. The start times, the weekday start times are 7 p.m.
Which is way better.
I like tremendously better. And there's one 6:30 weekday start game.
That's fine. As long as it's not 5 o'clock. Was it last year? 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. There were a couple 6 o'clock
for no
reason.
It wasn't even on NBC Sports Channel or TSN.
That's what we initially
TSN thought. National.
Yeah.
Didn't make any sense.
The home game against the Minnesota Wild is at the home game against the Minnesota Wild is a 6:30 start time. But, you know, a lot of 7 o'clock games... if you're one of those guys, if you're looking to plan your road trip, three games in four nights in Los Angeles, Anaheim, and San Jose.
Mm-hmm.
That Los Angeles game is the road afternoon game on the Saturday. So that's a Saturday afternoon road game. Then they go to Anaheim for the Sunday to see Timu, if you like, and then Tuesday in San Jose.
Could be Timu's last year.
Well, he's been saying that for a lot of years. Season starts. We open at home Saturday, October 13th, 2 o'clock start. Against the Carolina Hurricanes. Season ends Saturday, April 13th, against the Ottawa Senators.
In Ottawa.
The last home game is Thursday, April 11th, against the Florida Panthers.
Yep.
You know, it's a decent schedule. It's
hey, if as long as there isn't a work stoppage, then, I mean, every single game is going to be exciting and entertaining as far as I'm concerned.
It should be. Of the breakdown, 6 Monday games, 19 Tuesday games, 5 Wednesday games, 16 Thursday games, 9 Friday games, 19 Saturday games, and 8 Sunday games. Of those Wednesday games, 2 of those 5 games are right around Christmas. I think one is Boxing Day in Edmonton, okay. And that Minnesota Wild game is January 2nd. So, I mean, that'll be those will be the Wednesday games. So there'll be Wednesdays you can sort of book off. That's your day with your significant other if you're lucky enough to have one. Jets don't play very many Wednesday games there.
Yeah, you know, I don't mind the days. I like the way they did it that way. No issues with that at all.
Yeah. It'll be that'll be very interesting. That New Year's Eve game, that's always the popular game. You know, I always like that game. That's a good game to go to. 4 o'clock.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. That's 4 o'clock on the Monday.
Where's the party later on in the night?
Well, wherever
you Is it you too early to start planning New Year's Eve in July?
Haven't you already? I thought you were already soliciting dates for that.
I wasn't. Somebody on ice.
Is there a tornado in the studio right now?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, getting a little feedback in our headphones, Timmy, but... you know, yeah, that is a good game. No, but the schedule, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we're going to be on all throughout the summer.
Yeah.
Obviously, including next week with the couple of shows, one at the Free Press Cafe. But
I'm pumped for that show, by the way.
As long as there's hockey next year, I mean, the schedule to me, I realize that, you know, fans want us to break it down and everything and on the website and stuff like that. But I think, you know, we didn't talk about it. We touched on it a little bit earlier, but you got to get those Western teams back in, and Calgary and Vancouver coming in in February to me is probably for all the negatives with no Timu and some of that. I think that the biggest positive is that Calgary and Vancouver are coming back to Winnipeg.
The best four games are Chicago, Detroit, Calgary, Vancouver.
And Chicago is the second game of the season, much like it was last year.
The only concern that some fans have voiced to me since the schedule came out is if the lockout occurs, you lose that game.
Well, that is if you lose games or...
Early games. But, I mean, you know, I don't think there's going to be a lockout that'll cut into the regular season schedule. The exhibition may be another story, but, again, the NHL would be quite stupid, which they've been before, to lose more games.
I don't mind if they cut into the exhibition schedule. Would they have 4 exhibition home games, 2 on the road, and 1 neutral site game in Saskatoon against the Bruins?
Yeah, you know, and that's nice for the Saskatoon fans. So, again, you know, Ray McGregor wrote about it today, don't count on the season starting. Don't count Saskatoon fans. Don't count on a Barrie fans because the NHL has made stupid decisions before. Let's hope that that's not the case.
Right.
That would be an ideal thing.
Nice for our neighbors to the west to be able to see NHL hockey.
Oh, the game's already sold out.
Oh, yeah.
The big games, too. Because it went on sale months ago. It was announced and went on sale months ago.
Yeah.
And so it's already sold out.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that Benoit Pouliot trade, by the way.
Let's talk about that one real quick before we go to cheers and jeers.
Benoit Pouliot, you know, big, tall, good skater, good hands, all the skill in the world. Doesn't seem like he's got any, the desire that he has.
Work ethic has always been the question.
Work ethic, lazy
former
guy.
4th overall draft.
Oh, yeah. I mean, traded for Guillaume Latendresse, a guy from the Wild bus in the Wild. Montreal didn't have a place for him. Boston wasn't going to qualify him, so they figured might as well get rid of him because if they don't qualify him, they're going to let him go anyways. And they traded him to Tampa Bay for a fifth round pick and Michelle Ouellette. So for not much really, but better than nothing.
Michelle Ouellette, that's a flashback from the 2006 Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the thing about Pouliot is you're going to see if Guy Boucher can get something out of that skill. Pouliot will score some of the most beautiful goals. So you'll see. Pure talent level is high. But I guess if Julien couldn't do it, Lemaire couldn't do it. So the idea that maybe a French coach can get through there. Well, Boucher is only there, I guess, to be the 4th of the bunch, right? Because Montreal, who was coaching Montreal then when he was there? I'm now forgetting who was the coach.
Pouliot?
Wouldn't have been Carrion, would it?
No, it would have been after Carrion, who was the Bobby.
Carbon.
Carbon. So, I mean, out of any of the coaches...
Carbon, Martin, it doesn't matter. It's always a fun guy.
So if you're looking at that angle, that's probably not something that's going to work. It's a worthy risk.
Yeah. I mean, there's no...